HF rig getting me in the truck, and I was on the way to work one morning, and I talked to Antarctica. I talked to Europe and Russia and all over in there quite a bit, but I was talking to Antarctica one morning on the way to work. So I don't know. I've had people tell me that they're like the FT8 and stuff, or the stuff that I don't remember what it's called now. But anyway, it sends out like a beacon, and it's got across the pond on FM. So I thought that was pretty outstanding. And under the right conditions, I don't see why you couldn't.
That's, it's just fascinating to think about it. And, today, people, unlike folks that have the age that you and I have, they probably haven't gone to sleep listening to the radio. Late night radio, that's a different country. It really is, but something I enjoyed all growing up, a little old, five tube. I think they call it an All-American 5. Had 5 tubes in it. There are some that are similar with 6, but mine had 5 tubes. It had, it did have 6. I wasn't counting the, there's a green glow tube that's turned sideways, and it exits the front of the case, and it shows the signal strength of the signal. You use it long enough and it gets weak and not very showy, but boy, brand new, those things are real wonders, and help you if your ears, AM, this was an AM radio. AM can, and if you're trying to dial it in and just propped up on one arm because you're in bed by now and you're trying to get to sleep, and the radio helps. Well, that habit has never left me. I still go to sleep with the radio on. KK4JBQ.
Yes, well, that's, years ago, people don't realize how really young TV is, and, the stuff we got now is just unbelievable. But we used to sit around the radio and listen to the radio programs. And, we kind of look at the front of that old piece of furniture it was. It was a radio, but it was in a nice cabinet and right, pretty furniture. Big old speaker with a cathedral-looking front on it. most of them were RCAs or something of that nature. They were other brands, of course. We listened to many, many radio programs, and then we got our first TV was, of course, it was black and white, and we didn't have an outside antenna for a long time, and Daddy would fuss and get angry with the rabbit ears, try to get a signal in on the TV, and then later in years, we got an outside antenna, and boy, we thought we was in high cotton then. We could see the programs, and they were pretty clear, and, didn't roll and get all that static and stuff on them. Then we went uptown, and then, I can't remember what year it was, but it hadn't been that many, it's depending on how you count years, I guess. In other years, it's been a good many, but, in the scheme of things, it hadn't been but just a few days, and we had got the color TVs, and now we got all the fancy flat screens and everything else. It's amazing how far technology's come in that respect.
Sir, you helped me remember, for the first time in a long time, one of my earliest memories. My parents were visiting my dad's folks. They were tobacco farmers, and it was, I think it was down in the fall. I was in the crib. As I said, it's one of my earliest memories. I was in the crib. I could hear people talking. I remember that, but I couldn't make it out. I couldn't understand. I was old enough, I think, that I had a little bit of language, you know. I couldn't talk much myself, but I had trouble talking when I was younger. I stammered quite a bit when I did get, 4 or 5 years old. And I had to get broken from that. But anyway, that night, I witnessed something that that's one of my earliest memories. I lay there in the crib, had these, you know, slats on it, like a jail. Bars. I remember that. And I listened and tried to make out what they were talking about. And they were talking about the tobacco crop. They were talking about how many pounds per acre maybe that they were expecting to harvest from it, and just all kinds of stuff. As my dad and a few uncles, there were, you know, 16 boys and girls. That was a big family, you know. And for the longest time, it was just me and my brother when my mom and dad came to making a family. But my dad told me once, he kind of leaned in and whispered to me, he says, they had lots of children because that was work. That was working. Everybody was a farmhand. KK4JBQ.
Everybody all the kids, they were just farmhands. You know, everybody had a job, and if you didn't do it, then it got put off on somebody else, and then mom and daddy really got mad. I used to go up to my grandparents. They had a woodshed out there next to the barn. And granddaddy would add a big saw that he'd hook up to the back tire, take the back tire off his tractor and hook it up to a big belt, and saw logs up into planks. And then he'd cut the planks up. Basically, he'd use the outside of the tree and put it in the woodshed there, and it, you know, you'd have to split it up, put it in the wood stove. And the main stuff he would use, you'd make lumber out of it, or you know, whatever he needed. And so, but anyway, that was my job when I went up to Granny and Granddaddy's. And my job was to go out there and split the wood and have plenty of it ready to be hauled in for my grandmother to run the wood stove. And that's the only thing she cooked on. And so, you know, she'd bank the fire, you know, the coals at night, and then get up in the mornings and stoke it back up. And, boy, she'd have a pan of biscuits ready in just a few minutes, it seemed like. But everybody on the farm worked, you know, and nobody complained about it. They knew they had something to do, and it had to get done. And if they didn't do it, they'd put it off on somebody else. So you just got up and went and did your thing.
Just made a couple more memories to bubble up. My dad's dad, he lived in a place near Rogersville, Tennessee, up on a ridge. And this ridge was so sharp, locally they called it the backbone. We live over there on the backbone. Anyway, they lived in a house that was unlike any other house I've ever been in. Its kitchen was separated from the rest of the house. Now, they explained to me later that they did that, separate the kitchen, because if, you know, their houses were just out of slat wood, planks, you know, plank walls and such as that, I think they put newspaper and such on the wall for a little insulation. Well, what the R factor would be. Oh, Lordy. But you caused me to think about that when you were talking about that, about the kitchen. Well, people called their grandparents by different names. My granddad was Papaw, and my grandmother was Mamaw. So Mamaw would, she had lots of kids, plus visitors on this day, me and my little family. And we ate in two shifts. It was a big table. I'm telling you, a big table. Everybody had a seat. They could sit about 10 at the table, I think. It didn't, you know, it was just a plank. Just they built their own table. Saw down a few trees and you got a house, you know. So anyhow, she served everybody from her stove. And she never sat down. She never had a seat. I wondered about that, and we'd have to talk about it. She and I did later on. She explained that when the food was ready, it had to come off, and it went down the table and was served that way. People passed it. You know, they took the bowl and passed it on to somebody else. And that woman, bless her soul, she's been gone for many years now, but she stood up and served from her wood stove meals to that big family every single day. And she was just a tiny thing. She was probably 5'2". I come from good stock and real good people. I'm proud of them. I'm not trying to say anything about myself, but I am proud of them. KK4JBQ.
She was called Granny, and my granddad was called Granddaddy. And my mother's side was Mama and Papa. Yeah, so that's the way we distinguish between the four grandparents. But I used to go up to Granny and Granddaddy's, and I'd go up to Mama and Papa's too. But if I went up there, my mother's dad was a brick mason by trade. And, you know, he was deaf, so, you know, it was hard to get him to do a whole lot of different things. But, you know, he had a wood shop down in his basement, and I'd go down there, and he'd show me how to build stuff and, you know, help me out with wood and that sort of thing. But Granddaddy, on the other hand, he was just an old farmer. Mama and Papa had indoor plumbing at the time, but Granny and Granddaddy had a well. And so they finally got indoor plumbing in 1963, and that was when they brought the potty inside. They had a two-seater outhouse. It was way out from the house. You know, you had to walk a long ways. But in 1963, they got indoor plumbing, and they thought they was in high cotton then.
There's another bunch of memories. Yeah, you know, people lived a little harder. It was a little harder to make a day of it. Whatever the temperature was, whatever the weather was, every day was a hard day. But those folks, bless their souls, they made life work any way they could. Now, my Mamaw and Papaw, when they built that house, they built it near a spring house. Well, it was artesian, and it sprung up on its own. They didn't drill for it or anything like that. I guess it was in a bunch of rocks, and they built a spring house around it. And when I would visit them, and old enough, as I mentioned earlier, I was still sleeping in a crib. My first memory with them. But as I got older, they would give me some chore. You know, this is how you raise kids. You know, people don't do that anymore. You find work for kids. You're more appreciative if you're involved. That's the whole idea, you know. So I was given a pail, to go fetch some water. And we'd go down to the spring house, and it was an easy, I remember running to the spring house. but I didn't run coming back. I was silly, and I filled it up a little more than I should have. You know, she only wanted to wash some dishes and to keep some drinking water handy. But it was the best water, even though you could get in there and you'd be dipping it out with a dipper, you know. You'd be dipping out the water into that pail, and every once in a while you get something living. And you'd have to find some way to get that out, even if you had to pour the whole thing out again and start bailing again, you know. Lordy, just marvelous. Yeah. And that woman, bless her soul, she taught me how to milk, how to churn butter, break beans. I just am so happy that I was able to have some memories like that. Now, that may not, if there's a young person out there listening, they might not think that that's too much, that that's not a lot going on, but I'll tell you. When you could hug those memories, you could squeeze them so tight, they might pop out of your head. That's how much I love the memories that my people, all of them, I just come from good people. And so many things. You and I'd be here all night. We both got so many things like that, don't we? KK4JPQ.
All kinds of memories and stories and who knows what all, but I enjoy reminiscing every once in a while. I try not to dwell on it, but Larry, you know, you and I were fortunate. We grew up in a time before all the technology that we've got now, and Joy and I were talking earlier, you know, I don't know if today's kids could go into a library and do research and find out the information that they need if their computers went down. You know, that sounds ugly, I guess, and I don't mean it that way, but by golly, I think it's the truth. You know, if it wasn't for the computers, you know, they want to know something, they type in Google, you know, what is this or where is this, you know, all this. They don't know how to use books and flip pages and do research like we had to do. But that's just another sign of the times, I guess. KI4DOS.
Good point there, and in such a way that it reminds me that the use of the library, that wasn't easy. Now, the little country school that I went to, all of the books, now, you have to understand, it was still, let's see, yeah, it was still in the 50s when I went to the first grade. But it wasn't until maybe the fourth, possibly the fifth grade, that I got taken to the library for the first time. Now, every book in that library, I would come to understand, was there since the 30s or 40s. Now, that sounds like very old, but remember, this is the 50s. So it was only 10 or 20 years old, the books, and they still had good learning in them, I suppose. But we were taught how not to turn the corners down, you know, to mark our place in the book. A big old librarian lady who looked like she could just sit on you and squash you. Yeah, she was terrible. She just sounded that way, I'm sure. She just wanted to be looked up to or respected or something, you know, when she told you, don't you turn down those corners, or what else would people do? Oh, they'd lick their fingers in order to turn the pages, or smush the pages in order to turn from one page to another. And she listened and she watched everybody. Anyway. But I recall that we had some encyclopedias. I kind of liked the encyclopedias, lots of pictures. You know, those books that had only words in them, they would come later, you know. That's funny now that I like the books with pictures in them. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, goodness. Well, I wouldn't give it up. I didn't have the best education. I know I didn't. But the people who were there tried hard with what they had in hand to educate us. And I kind of like to, in the early grades, I say up until maybe the fourth grade, I like being read to. And into the fifth grade, I remember her name was Goodman. Miss Goodman was a redhead, and the first redheaded woman I had ever seen in my life. And, you know, I was with her every day. And she was a pip. Boy, oh boy. She would read to us a little bit, and then she'd take the book that she was holding, and she passed it on down the row of kids. And we would read as much as we could until we got stumped on a word, or we couldn't read well enough to keep anybody interested. So I got to, while still in that school, that elementary school, I got to where I liked reading out loud. And because she taught us to read with enthusiasm, with, you know, some variation of the voice, and, you know, like somebody was telling a story, you know, is the way she put it. I learned to like reading because of the way she taught us like that. And passing a book around among members of the class, that was cool. KK4JBQ.
You're getting my knuckles wrapped right hard with a wooden ruler. You know, they had wooden rulers back then. They weren't plastic. Man, they were foot-long ruler smacked across your knuckles hurt. But I almost dog-eared a book one time in the library, and the librarian was walking around, and she saw me, and I reached up and grabbed that corner, and before I folded it down, she whacked me across the knuckles, and she said, "Don't you do that." So after that, I didn't dog-ear any books, I guarantee you.
Well, it was evident that that takes some relearning for some kids, I suppose. Because all of our books were old, and we weren't getting any new ones. And our textbooks, you know, I'm sure you remember this. I don't know if they still do it this way. But they were supplied by the schools, and everybody got their own book. They'd be, I don't know when that started, maybe third grade or something. You got your own set of books. And if you hadn't finished your lessons, or you were given lessons for homework, that was a new thing back then, in those grades, if you were given homework, you had to take the book home with you, you know. And you probably remember that you had to write your name in the back of the book, and the grade and so on, and whose class you were in and so on and so forth. It was a way of making kids responsible, I suppose. If that book went missing, well, you couldn't turn it back in at the end of the year. So, you know, some way to make you aware to be, you know, responsible with it. And but you get a book that had both the last page, I forget what, there's a formal name for the last page. It has no printing on it. There's a formal name for that page. But it was a place where they put that sticker. And I had books that were 20 years old, and every kid that had used that book had to sign their name in the back of that book on one side or the other of the cover or the inside last page. I hadn't thought of that in many years. Yeah, we were taught to be responsible. And that was a tough thing to do. You know, another thing the kids don't do anymore is walk to school. I had about 6 miles going and coming. And I had to cross a pasture with a bull in it. Cross a creek that we had to cross that creek on shaky rocks. And go through several, what do they call them here? The fences that are made for people but not cattle. You know, the fences where you go first one way and then you just zigzag your way. And that's how you got through the fences that we would come to. And, I wouldn't give anything for that time in my life. Wouldn't give it up, no. KK4JBQ.
Well, I didn't have that far to go to school myself, but we had a creek not far from the house, and we played in the creek, and especially in the summertime, we'd go down and dam it up and dig it out, and we'd have this little swimming hole where we could go down there and get wet and that sort of thing. But I had to cross after I went to this elementary school. It was on a 2-lane road, and then later in years they made it a 4-lane road. And of course, when they made it 4-lane, then they had to, we even had crossing guards on the 2-lane road because they were, young kids, you know, just in grammar school, first, second grade. And, but they weren't kids. They were grown-ups. They would help you across the street, and you could walk on over to your classroom and all that. One thing I remember is I think it was my second grade teacher, and, or it might have been my third, I don't remember. It was one of my earlier grades. And we'd already, just learned to read, and, one of my teachers told my mother that I read real slow, and one of my teachers told mother, says, he doesn't have any trouble reading. He said, yes, he reads slow, but he talks slow. And so, I expect him to read a little slower than somebody that talks real fast. And mother asked the teacher, she said, does he have any problems understanding? And my teacher said, no, he understands everything he reads. So it's not his reading ability. It's just that he talks slow, and that's the reason he reads slow. But, years ago we had school teachers I don't know how you'd classify them now. I'm glad they're still out there, and there's people that want to be teachers and educators. And maybe that's what it is. We got educators now. And when you and I went to school, we had teachers.
Well, I don't know what that promotion was all about, but yeah, it's true. Well, I got talking about talking slow. I was, I guess, maybe second grade was when I had completely gotten away from my stutter. That was rough. I mean, it was, I guess I started working on that along with a housekeeper that looked after us. We're shift workers in cotton mill, and I didn't get much help from Mom and Dad on schoolwork or anything like that. But I asked for a chalkboard, you know, one of those easel-like chalkboards, and had the chalk part on one side, and it had like a felt board on the other side. I really like that felt board thing. All the letters had a similar felt on them, and when you stuck the letter up on the on that side, the side it was intended for, the letter stuck, and you could make words that way. So this housekeeper, her name was Gertrude. That's an old name. We called her Gertie, because that was easier to say. And she helped me learn my alphabet. And Gary, I had a good command of my alphabet before I ever went to school. And it wasn't easy. I remember it wasn't easy to take these funny-looking pieces of cloth and give them some, you know, to understand how a word is built with those letters. That's a big hurdle, you know. If nobody had said anything to you about how words are made, and you had no curiosity, but I was curious about everything, you see. But, you know, some kids are not going to be helped in that. I got some help, and I think a boost, especially when it came to reading. So I was awfully thankful for that. Yeah. But I got through, and as it turned out, along with Donna's help, after we married, our educations were way out of whack. I don't know, I think she married me out of pity. I only had a high school education, and Donna has a master's degree. It seems kind of lopsided, don't it? Anyway, but I've always been so enthused with the world around me. I'm so interested and curious about everything. You know, when television came along and they put all kinds of learning things on the television, I was right there for it, you know. But I didn't have any formal education past high school. And so Donna helped me get a couple of advanced degrees. And that says a great deal about the woman, don't you think? KK4JBQ.
The rest, let Man on the Mountain have his say. Yes, it does say a lot about Miss Donna. It really does. She is a fine lady. And I'm glad that she was able to help you and that sort of thing. I don't know what brought that other on either, Larry. I just got in here and got to remembering stuff. And you know how our minds go sometimes. They just go off on a somewhere on their own. And I guess that's what happened. But, it is what it is. And I'm just glad to be here and glad that I've had the experiences that I've had. And we're very lucky, very fortunate, both of us. You know, we've both got very sweet wives, and they take care of us whether we want them to or not. Irritate and aggravate us sometimes, but I'm sure we do them the same way. Joy had had more college than I did, but, you know, then I went in the military and right out of high school, I went to all the schools I could go to while I was in the military. And wondered why in the world I didn't pay more attention and do better in school when that was my only job. Now I had two jobs and I needed to learn as much as I could and go from there. So I guess we live and learn. What do you think?
Two things come together. If you are alive, you better be learning. Now, some learning is a lot more practical than other learning. I found that when I was in college, that I went there for Well, computers were coming along. I remember when I first saw a web address. It was written on the board, and I could not figure out what in the world that must be. So I was not in the classroom I should have been in. For some reason, I remember that. And so I asked someone who looked like they might be aware of what that it wasn't a sentence, you know. You look at a web address, and it's not a sentence. It's got characters in it that don't belong in a sentence. And that's when it was explained to me. So I know very well, probably everybody does have some recollection of how they came to see computer language, you know, what you would type into a... I named my hockey puck here, I named it computer. So every time it hears that word, it acknowledges somehow or other. I can't go without saying that word in general conversation these days. And it comes and corrects me. I can't understand that, she says. What do you want? And I'll tell her, never mind. But anyway, I was going to school for computer science. However, the thing that I was most interested in, totally different, was geology. I had no idea that I would be so enamored with geology. So, of course, it was a four-year education, a four-year degree. And the last 3 years, I took all of the geology I could. You know, I grew up roaming the hills and outside all the time, so I saw a lot of the... I saw a lot of geology. And we studied things like the Grand Canyon and the Continental Divide. The detail was extreme detail. We took the Grand Canyon apart as we studied it, you know. And the inconsistencies were part of how the thing was formed. And the layers, you could just read them, where the earth split, got back together, shattered off one side, and the canyon is just full of that stuff. And you can, if you, of course, the canyon's been cut by water, and if you look at that wall, either side, in any place, you can read it. What happened at what time? And you know, the Colorado River, not so much anymore, but it used to. I mean, it was a mighty river, much more so than it is now. Anyhow, I just ate that up, and I took so much of that that without any idea, I was approached by the head of the department after graduation to come on as an assistant, and I would be paid a stipend by the college, and I would continue my education working on a master's degree. And we had other plans. We'd already made other plans, and I had to turn that down. But it was nice to, you know, for someone to, in an official way, to acknowledge that not just the work that I did, but how much I loved it. I grew up where a lot of road cuts, you know, were, and you did too. I mean, you must have seen road cuts all over this country. To make a road, after the 30s anyway, you'd make a road by cutting it down to where you had a long stretch, rather than just go up and down and up and down with the natural contour of the land, you know. KK4JBQ, in case anyone cares. So when that is done, when they cut through the land to make a flat, straight road, then they cut through layers of the geologic deposition of the soil, the rock, whatever, and especially around here on the eastern side of the United States, you'd see where, you know, there was a big hunk of land that broke off of Africa, they think, and made its way across the Atlantic Ocean and slammed into the eastern shore of the United States and raised up the Appalachian Mountains. Well, all of that, I was hooked by the time I learned that. KK4JBQ.
For DOS, with KK4JBQ. Well, that's one thing that I should get interested in, but I haven't been really interested in. But, you know, we did study it in school when I don't study anymore. Economics, for one. But that's another story. But Larry, I'm really enjoying this, but unfortunately, Joy's hollering at me. I need to go see what she needs. And but we'll do this again some day real soon. I think I'm going to call Lynette for Patrick Sunday. You know, he's having surgery tomorrow, having that knee surgery. And I told him I'd call Lynette for him. Yeah, of course, if he's feeling like it, he may pick it up, but if not, I'll be here Sunday night for sure. But I'd love to do this again real soon. I need to call you on the phone. We can talk on the phone for hours. But I need to run in here and see what she needs. Her back's been bothering her a good bit. And she probably hurt herself getting out of her recliner or something. I don't know. Either that, it's time for our nightly pills. I just have to look up the clock. That may be what it is. But you and Miss Donna have a wonderful evening, what's left of it, and a wonderful day tomorrow. Maybe I'll catch you on radio tomorrow evening, and we'll say 73 to you for now. KK4JBQ, KI4DOS.
It's been a big pleasure, Gary. And, yes, let's do the very next chance we get. And thank you for reminding me about Patrick's surgery. I wanted to, you know, send up a special prayer. I know he'll be fine. I know he'll pull through just fine. But it never helps. It never hurts to request help. That's how that should come out. Even when you don't know what it's all about, it sounds pretty scary to me. I've never had any surgery, and the whole deal sounds pretty scary to me. Anyhow, get yourself a good night's rest, and I hope you have a marvelous day tomorrow. This is KK4JBQ. I'm clear with you.
See what she wants. KK4JBQ, KI4DOS, clear.